Stream of consciousness. Go.
Stream of, it's just going to launch. Just going to go right into it. Here we go. Welcome to the Fan Gamer Podcast. My name is Simon Roberts, but you can call me Kevin. We are back at you this week with more from the best of the oldest and the newest and all the things in between in the world of video gaming and the merchandise produced by our fine company. Let me start you off by introducing you to the gang. We got the man, the B-Dog, Brian Shadow X.
How's it going?
It's going fantastic. We have the Losar. His name is Charlie.
Hey.
Hey. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
That's fantastic. We have joining us for the first time, the Skull to the Rick. Skull Rick, it's Matt.
Pleasure to be here, Kevin.
Pleasure to have you, sir. The pleasure, believe me, is entirely mine. You can have a little, you know, when I'm not using it. We have all the way from the merchandising side, the top man at the top of the totem pole. Give it up. It's Johnny K. Hey, John.
Good evening.
Good evening indeed. And last but not least, we have Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Liz. Is that the running joke where you just cut me off and I get no introduction? Because I think that is a form of misogyny.
I don't mean to do it. Really, I should have done it to Reed because he's not even here. Reed might have a special guest appearance from Reed stopping by later on in the show. But I just wanted to get it going because it's so exciting. So much is going on. What did everybody get from their friends and family for Hanukkah? What's everybody playing this week?
For Hanukkah?
Yeah, Hanukkah started. And I'm assuming everybody is getting gifts from whoever buys you gifts for Hanukkah in this fine Jewish nation of ours.
So is it what we're playing for Hanukkah?
What you got for Hanukkah, if you got anything. Are you telling me you don't celebrate Hanukkah, John?
I would assume that my consumption of pork products this week would say no.
Ooh, good point. All right, what are you playing that happens to coincide with Hanukkah, John?
Donkey Kong Country.
Donkey Kong Country, love it. I heard you were going to put out some Donkey Kong merchandise.
I'm working on it right now. In the pipeline, or in the barrel now, you could say.
Is it Candy Kong related?
No, thank goodness.
Can it be?
Inquiring minds wanted to know. All right.
I'm asking for a friend.
Okay, let's go to the other new guy. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
What are you playing this week?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Dragon Age.
Oh, yeah. Charlie was playing that last week.
So I don't want to be stepping on his turf, but I've been really into it. It's a BioWare RPG, which I really get into, and it's great. But I kind of have a story about the last BioWare RPG I got really into, which was Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, yeah.
I got into that back in college, and I played it until my appendix almost burst.
What? True story.
Yeah. Basically, I got it and started playing it and just played it nonstop for like 10 hours. And all of a sudden I got this really sharp pain in my stomach and I was like, oh, this really hurts, but I don't want to stop playing. Eventually I did. I lied down and then had to call health services up because I had this pain in my stomach going on for so long. And they're like, yeah, your appendix is kind of inflamed. We got to take you to the hospital. So, 12 hours later, I got my appendix out.
And the whole time, you were just jonesing, man, I could have gotten one more level done.
Yeah, I really was.
So, what body part do you think is going to fall off or fail on you during Dragon Age?
I don't know. I don't think I have any more expendable ones.
Is it more like a liver failure kind of game? Maybe the spleen, maybe just like an arm falls off or something?
Are your tonsils intact?
I think so. Maybe those can go on me.
What about wisdom teeth?
No, I just had those out January. No game that time. They just really hurt.
Maybe that was that's like preventative surgery before Dragon Age. There's probably some guy with wisdom teeth out there who's like, the back of my jaw really hurts today for some reason. He's playing Dragon Age.
It could be.
So there you go, listeners. If you're playing Dragon Age, make sure you go to your dentist. Let's move to our last newcomer, Brian.
Yo.
What are you playing this week?
Actually, I have a little bit of a dilemma. I just finished Assassin's Creed 2, which is great, by the way. But I'm in between games right now, and I have a choice. is either Rock Band 2, which, no, I have not played. I mean, I've played at, you know, parties, but I've never actually sat down and played it. I have Dragon Age, or I have Mass Effect, which I am probably the only person that hasn't played this yet.
Well, first of all, have you still got your wisdom teeth?
No.
Okay, then you could clear to Dragon Age. Second of all, if you were going to play crazy RPG stuff, would you play old school fantasy or step it up to the modern sci-fi?
I don't know what I'm feeling right now.
I guess that's kind of a transparent question. That doesn't help. Yeah.
Well, it's really, I know Matt's been playing it, but what do you think? What do you think, Matt? Is it that all that?
I certainly think so.
And has anyone played Mass Effect?
Yes.
Tell us about Mass Effect, Charlie.
Well, I played it 3 times all the way through. Because there's 6 classes, there's 3, like, there's a full-on magic, full-on attack, and full-on technical, and then there's 3 that are kind of, like, in between each of those. And so I played it 1 time as each of the full-ons, and each has sort of a different alignment type thing, so I enjoyed it every single time, and I just used an increased difficulty each time just to see.
So lots of replay value there.
I thought so.
Do they ever explain how there's magic in space?
It's actually more, it's kind of more earthboundy. It's all psychic and experiments just to give you these psychic powers, apparently.
So is it like the Force, but they don't call it the Force?
Not as utilitarian as the Force.
Or is it more like System Shock 2, where you just have the magic orb and it plugs into your wrist?
I'm actually not certain. I have never played System Shock.
Well, there you go. You should go back and play. There you go, Brian. Go play System Shock.
You know, I've never actually played that either.
Fantastic. Absolutely wonderful game. It's like Bioshock, but on a spaceship.
You know, Brian, I would probably give Mass Effect a try, because the way they've been talking about Mass Effect 2, I know they just released some of the voice acting cast for that, and they're really putting a lot of effort, and I'm guessing money into it, so it'll be worth it to play the first one, since I think the second one's really going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, isn't like, the cast is like pretty much everyone from every sci-fi thing in the last, like, 5-6 years?
Yeah, Worf is on it.
Yeah, and half of the Battlestar Galactica cast, which is great.
Is there some Nathan Fillion? Because if there is, I am all over that.
There's Martin Sheen?
I don't even know who that is.
Martin Sheen.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you said Martha. Like, who's that?
Wait, wasn't one of the... I think I read
the
that.
The lesser-known Sheen's sister, yes.
Wasn't one of the cast members Seth Green?
Yeah, Joker.
Oh, he's in everything.
Yeah, he was in the first one, definitely.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check out Mass Effect after you, Brian, because it seems good, and I kind of want to check it out, too. So, once I finish Dragon Age.
Which will be about a year from now.
Probably. I'm doing all the side quests and all that stuff.
Is it true with Dragon Age, like that one Penny Arcade said, that you can pay for downloadable content armor, and then characters in your party can just walk off with it, effectively stealing your money?
Well, yeah, just don't be jerks with the people in your party, I guess. Don't make them walk off. You gotta be careful.
That seems like kind of a jerk move on the game's part.
Well, it's just a new twist on that old... I mean, when Cid jumps out of your airship with the bomb strapped to his chest in Final Fantasy II and blows up the side of the cliff, same thing happened to me. He had all the best armor because he was my favorite character.
But you didn't pay extra for that armor.
Didn't I, Liz? Didn't I? Maybe not in a quantifiable monetary amount, but the damage to my soul has been irreparable.
Yeah, I spent so much time with the gold saucer.
Didn't we all?
I just wanted to go on a date with Cid. Is that so wrong?
You can take Cid on the Chocobo race. You can't date him, though.
Fair enough. Oh, hey, Charlie, you still playing Dragon Age?
Actually, I just finished it today. Can I spoil the ending? You win.
You do?
Yeah, you sure do. Well, I think there might be a possibility that you don't win. There's lots of possibilities to go any direction in these types of games. But the way I played it, yeah, I won. It was pretty nice. Yeah.
So you're not necessarily guaranteed, like, you can do a different path and then you might lose.
Possibly, or maybe you win in a completely different way. It's hard to say.
It doesn't hold you down to just one definition of winning.
Right.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I can get behind that. I hate when a game is just like, you won, and you won the way we made you win. And you're a tool of the system now. I like having a little bit of freedom.
So, yeah, actually, at the moment, I am free for another game. I haven't chosen what my next thing is. I mean, on the side, I'm playing Final Fantasy Tactics on the PSP, but that's kind of like saying I'm playing Tetris. I mean, I can just pick that up anytime and just occupy myself.
Tetris doesn't have that many false gods, though.
Or T-Block. All right. Hey, Liz, what are you playing this week?
I am about to start a game of Chrono Trigger DS, but I am debating whether I should do a new game or a new game plus, because it's been a very long time since I did a new game, and Kevin, I think we had this discussion a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't actually know how long things take anymore, and the thought of going back and playing a new game with, like, the wood weapons is repulsive in a way.
A little. There's still sort of an element of replayability to the degree of, like, how much you can... Let me start that sentence again, because it just took off on me right there. There is something to be said for the replay wherein you know what you're supposed to do, so you can take a little time, if you will. You can be a little more hasty in your decisions, because you're like, whatever. I'll get this, that, and the other piece of equipment in this dungeon, so I don't really need this equipment now.
I have the third option is I have a file that everyone at level 999, or just 99, I guess, but it's been my quest to steal enough magic tabs to bring everyone's magic up to the double star, which is tedious, to say the least, and pretty easy to
steal them?
Yeah, you can steal magic tabs from, you can only do it in the DS one. Like, I can't remember where you go where it sends you through a cycle of old rooms you've been through. Like,
the dimensional rift, the vortex.
Yeah, the vortex, yeah. But one of the dimensional vortex rooms is a room from the Ocean Palace.
From the Black Helmet.
Yeah, and...
I know you're talking about... Because that's what I was going to say. There is an enemy there you can steal the magic tabs from, but they disappear as soon as you fight them once. So you can only get two magic tabs there in the original cart. And you're quite right. That is a very tedious way to get lots of magic tabs. I've been doing it by restarting New Game Pluses over and over again, and then speedrunning to the end of time and fighting Specchio, because he gives you 10 magic tabs every time you kill him.
Yeah, that he does do that. But yeah, in the Chrono Trigger DS, if you just keep doing those rooms over and over again, you can get... I can't remember. I think it's 4 magic tabs every time you go through the room, and if you're good, you can do the 8 rooms in like 8 minutes, and so you can rack them up pretty fast.
Well, that is a new strategy. Something I hadn't thought of in the previous, because my mindset is sort of stuck on the old game back on the Super Nintendo, and you don't think forward when they give you new options like that.
The only problem is, once you get everyone up to that kind of magical ability, who are you going to use it on? By that point, you already can trash Specchio. I mean, he's a joke in any of his form.
You're only doing it for your own self-interest.
Exactly.
You know what you should do? Chrono Trigger DS. Start a new game, just a vanilla straight new game, but immediately save your game and go to the Arena of the Ages and start raising a monster and fighting with it and see if you can get really, really good equipment way before you're supposed to.
That's interesting, but I found the monster arena kind of a pain in the butt, if I say. Somehow I ended up with the higher level of the Naga woman thing, and that was thrilling for me, and I fought lots of battles with my high-level Naga monster and got nothing. I think I got 1 meter for physical attacks, which was garbage.
I've got all but 1 mirrors, so I'm really kind of annoyed that I can't get that last one.
It's not worth it.
Probably not. But it's there, and we have to have it.
That's true.
I'd actually be careful about playing Chrono Trigger again. Last time I started playing the DS version, I played about halfway through and then felt the need to write a story about it. And, well, now it's up to about 10,000 words.
How many pieces is that? I can't think of words.
19. Not so bad.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good length story.
Is that the one about a frog you were talking about doing?
Yeah, actually it is.
Frog's good people. He's kind of a bro. I like him.
I dig Frog. He's got good sort of a semi-tragic arc kind of thing going on there.
Yeah, I'm kind of bringing that out here.
Truth be told, I actually find Frog to be personally one of the less interesting characters, aside from like the obvious Chrono. I think Luca's backstory is cool because they don't go into it as much, but what's there is so interesting. And Magus has the best one. Sorry.
Mm. Well, let's finish off with what I've been playing. I went back, and when I say went back, I mean like a matter of months, because I've been playing Mega Man 9, not because I actually want to. I kind of hate the game. It's really, really difficult. But because they announced that Mega Man 10 is going to be coming out sooner or later, and I really kind of want to get back in shape so that I don't die.
You should always be in shape for a Mega Man, Kevin. That's like
I know. It's such a great series and so classic and all the hard stuff, though. You know, you jump on a platform and then a giant screw flies out of nowhere and hits you and knocks you into a pit.
Yeah, so, like Mega Man 2. It's like you have to work out once a year and play at least two old retro Mega Man games to get your skill up to that same old level, you know.
Mega Man 2. Just to stay on pace, yeah.
I got something to admit. I've never beaten a Mega Man game.
I've never played a Mega Man game.
Number 3. 3 is, I think, the easiest and the best.
Easiest, yes. Mega Man 2?
Mega Man 2, you know, it had some good moments. You know, I can't fight it. I mean, it had the dragon, which was awesome, and it had Bubble Man. It had Bubble Man, right?
It had Bubble Man.
Yes,
Quick Man.
Quick Man.
Yes, it did. And those are all awesome guys, but the fact that Mega Man 3, I could sit down, I could play it, enjoy it, and actually beat it, it was a little bit rewarding knowing that. Because, you know, on Nintendo, you couldn't stop and save it. You had the passwords, which, yep, you know, were not easy to remember or write down, because they were like bubbles.
Thank you, grid paper.
The grid coordinates. A1, B5, C2, 7.
Actually, Mega Man 2 had the best music, so that's what always kept me going back to that game.
Yeah.
So it's going along the same lines of games people hasn't played. I've never played a Final Fantasy.
Never?
Really?
Never.
Wow.
I probably you should get on that.
If you're not playing 1, play 6.
You mean 3?
Yeah, 3 US, 6 Japan, whatever.
This is America. We use the American numbering.
It's America!
Thank you, Nick. I had to drag that one out of my bag of tricks. I've been saying that for years.
Well, yeah, I've never played Final Fantasy. I've actually owned 4 Final Fantasies, but I've never played them.
Wait, why do you own them?
Well, I got them at the time, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to play these. I'm gonna find a time and a day to play these games. I got, you know, Final Fantasy 2, 3, 7, 8, Tactics. I was like, I'm gonna find the time to play it. You know what, and I was like, nah, I just never had the interest to play them.
Whatever you do, just don't start with 8.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
I'll have to give a try to some of the more old school ones, because I hear after 7 and 8, it's gotten different than what it originally was.
I liked 10 for what it was. I thought the way of leveling up, which was through like a point allocation system called the Sphere Grid, really pretty unique and cool, and lets you kind of see the progression of your characters in a way that just straight leveling doesn't let you do. I know that I bought a copy of 12, and I loaned it to Everdread because I didn't want to play it. He never finished it. I loaned it to Dios. He never finished it because he got bored. And Dios loaned it to your mama's mama, and he never finished it because he got bored. So not a ringing endorsement for 12.
Well, 12 did the battle system excellently. I just loved the way they completely did away with random battles, and it was all freeform. You run around, and you have this gambit system to where your party members will do things and given certain conditions, but the story didn't hold me in. After one 4-hour battle against some dragon, I was like, "Yeah, I think I've accomplished all I need to accomplish in this game."
John, I think you need to transform your Final Fantasy abstinence into Final Fantasy straight edgeness and only play the old games.
I think I'm gonna have to do that because I hear there's a certain kind of appreciation for the art of the RPG, or at least the the way things have been organized are kind of spawned from that era of the older ones. And I don't know if I should go back and play the ones on the NES and SNES or just go to the Game Boy iterations or the DS iterations. I'm kind of pushing towards portable personally.
Yeah, if you're going to play Final Fantasy III, pick up 6 for the DS. It's pretty much exactly the same thing except portable.
6 was like, they got it right, and they refined it throughout the years, and 6 was just like everything they did perfectly in that game.
I might have to pick that up.
See, I gotta disagree with you, Charlie. I feel like if I have the opportunity to play an older game, and it's within my means to get the game on the original cartridge, I love being able to put it in the Super Nintendo, plug it into the TV, and like sit in front of the couch because the cord doesn't quite stretch, because I feel like that's kind of the whole feeling at the time.
I actually just had Final Fantasy III literally within the last, like, 3 weeks, but I sold it to Xvis.
How much for?
Xvis is a good bud, so I sold it to him for a good price. But it wasn't, it didn't put me out on the street, but I sold it to him for a decent price.
Fair enough. I don't think that's a particularly hard game to get. I think, like, Chrono Trigger probably commands a higher price, as does maybe Earthbound, but it's certainly not garbage cheap.
I certainly dig on the original carts for their Ted Woolsey translations. I know a lot of people are kind of split about him, but I found he had a real sense of wordsmanship and just more fun with his translations.
I don't think they've messed with his translation for the DS iteration of that game, though.
No?
Because they sure changed Chrono Trigger.
Oh, yeah, they changed Chrono Trigger dramatically, but not Final Fantasy VI.
Well, actually, I have a question. You guys might have an answer for this. He did the translation for the American Final Fantasy II, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. So when that was retranslated, people were, like, happy because they were, you know, they wanted the real translation, what, you know, everyone was really saying. Yet they kept a couple of his original lines, like, you spoony Brad and everything. So I don't know. I don't know where the line it can be drawn when people want the original text translated and they want our American iteration. I mean, a lot of people had that same issue when Mother 3 was translated.
People just want what fits their own narrow mindset for it. Like, people were really upset when Tomatoes said, hey, we're going to have a little bit of swearing in Mother 3 because that was there. You know, we get these people who go, hey, you can't do that in this video game. You're not living up to my expectation of what an Earthbound game is. So you get people who say, oh, this translation wasn't good enough, or this translation is better, or I don't like how they added a bikini to the naked character in some anime that I don't watch. And yeah, people got to get out of their heads, man. Everybody get out of your heads and think about things in a new way. That's the message for this week.
I kind of see what you're saying, Brian, about how people kind of want the best of both worlds on translations. It's tough, though, because sometimes the original translations almost, like, rewrite the character in a way. Like, the character of Magus in Chrono Trigger, I think in the first American translation, is a little more flip and sarcastic than he was in the Japanese version, and in the retranslation, he kind of loses some of that edge, so if that's what you're used to as an American, it's not correct to you, but if that's what you know, it's technically correct, which is the best kind of correct, but you lose something from somebody else's interpretation of the character.
Well, they turned him into a brooding emo kid, you know. Where's the fun?
Yeah.
Where's
the fun?
They did the same thing with Final Fantasy Tactics, like when they switched everything over to Old English. There's some part in that game, I can't remember where, but someone's asking, like, why? How could you do this to me? And the one character, Delita, is like, don't blame me, blame yourself or God. And it's just one of those mean lines that loses something in this flowery old English.
Ouch. Blame yourself for God, that's a good one. I like that.
It is a good one, and it kind of was a bummer that they cut it in translation. He was full of good, mean one-liners like that, and they kind of neutered him with the Shakespeare.
But it all comes around to this whole expectation of nostalgia, which, bringing it back to Mega Man for a second, on the thread on Fangamer in the forums where we were talking about Mega Man 10, there were a couple of posts in there that said, this is great and all, it's so cool that they're doing the whole 8-bit style and sticking with that, but couldn't they step it up again? Couldn't they make a decent game with the modern technology? Couldn't they have done this with the 16-bit? And they were getting shouted down by other people who said, no way, 8-bit or nothing. You know, let's have the pixels. Let's have the shaky graphics that vibrate in and out and stuff. There doesn't seem to be a lot of desire for forward motion in maybe not the whole video game community, but certainly in our little sector of it here.
So what games are you intending to play this week? Because I know I want to play Metal Gear Solid 3. I need to play that. I need to.
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, there is Reed. And Reed has impressed upon me that I need to play Half-Life 2, which I have. So I need to play those games, but I'm kind of debating between myself. It's like, I want to work on this stuff. I want to get it out. But I'm like, I'm looking at a game, but no, that's play. I gotta work.
Well,
play.
Well, does it inspire you?
It does. Like, I remember when I played Bioshock back in October, that it inspired me and actually helped me create some of the designs on the Chimera pinset. And
really?
Yeah, it had a... It helped me have a new kind of appreciation for type. Like, if you look at the Chimera pinset, the random pinsets that have Mr. Pump, Bucket Brothers, and Dry Guy was directly influenced from looking at that kind of style from Bioshock. I was playing it at that time.
John, let me put it to you this way. If you are not inspired by Snake Eater when you play it, I will send you a personally written, handwritten, signed letter of apology, because I refuse to believe that game is not an inspiration.
And I will pay for the postage.
Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, I have it in my PS2. I just literally need to go and sit down with it. So I might do that this week. I think I'm going to be ordered to after this, secretly.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, John, I need to play Snake Eater as well. So why don't we set aside, like, Kevin and John play Snake Eater Day? And we'll both check in with each other before we start, and then we'll go play Snake Eater for an hour or two.
Would that be a play date?
I'll bring the controllers.
Whoa.
I think my mom bought some President's Choice Cola, and we have some microwave popcorn upstairs.
Do you have Hot Pockets?
Do I have Hot Pockets? John, talking to a Canadian here.
I need to cut in here and translate that the President's Choice Cola in America is RC. Just need to get that Canadian.
No, we have RC up here, too.
Okay. Yeah, and there would definitely used to be President's Choice. I haven't seen President's Choice around here for a while, but it definitely used to be around.
It's everywhere in Canada.
It's now Obama's choice.
I don't know who this president is because we have a prime minister, but apparently he runs the whole no-name food market. You can get President's Choice cat food, President's Choice engine degreaser, President's Choice lawn furniture. I wish I was kidding about this stuff.
Can you get robot oil, old-fashioned?
Absolutely. I think it comes in with the model train set.
It's pretty good.
It's terrifying.
Much like the fact that you two people have not played Snake Eater.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Good job. Good
literally.
Linking that back to the... We're going to answer some questions from the Fangamer mailbag. Hey guys, it starts. In the future, do you imagine Fangamer branching further and further from Starman.net as time goes on? Or do you think they'll always be closely intertwined? And that's from I Won't Get Over the Dam.
For me personally, I think I would stay more with Starman.net. Starman's always going to be my home, no matter what. So,
yeah.
Personally.
I think they're so closely integrated. Like, Fangamer would not have grown unless Starman.net was there for the seed. And I know some places they start like that and then they leave the old site behind and it takes off, but in our case I think it's going to stick.
Yeah, there's just too much nostalgia and support we've gotten from the Starman.net community. I mean, that's where we all started. That's where we've all, I mean, essentially most of us have grown up there, you know, because I started it 11 years ago. And I know John got in there just a couple of years later, and a lot of the rest of you did as well.
I know I personally would not be in art and design where I am and being happy with what I'm doing now if it wasn't for the site. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing – wait, what am I doing these days?
Eating Tim Hortons.
Yeah, I wouldn't be eating Tim Hortons if it weren't for Starman. How does that fall? No, I don't think that works. But
you wouldn't be half as Canadian as you are now if it wasn't for Starman.net.
Yeah, if it weren't for you guys, I wouldn't be wearing as much flannel. How about that? That works.
Well, for a legitimate answer for you, aren't you writing a lot? Like, do you think you would be doing that
as much without us? Yep, I certainly got my start on the trenches of the interactive fiction board and then branched out and started working on original stuff. And yeah, definitely my writing and John's art and everybody just has something they can say I took from this site and it's spread out this way.
I've never compared IFs to war before.
It was exactly like that. It was terrible, man. I mean, you know, some IF boards you heard about had like a roller coaster, and we had a pretty nice log flume ride, but it wasn't as good as a roller coaster. So it was just, that war was hard, buddy, man.
Is that like a South Park reference? What are you talking about?
I'm so glad somebody caught that, because I thought it was just going to go over everybody's head again. No,
no, that's good. The one where Jimbo and Ned talk about Vietnam having the log flume.
Yep.
We were going to let it go over our heads, but Liz had to jump in there.
No, it's funny because I just watched that episode. That's not even very good.
Whoa, serendipitous. Let's read another letter. Here we go. This one sort of, I think, will end up in John's category. But don't react until you hear the whole thing, John. I was disappointed to hear that Donkey Kong Country was being considered as a game for merch. That'll make the third Super Nintendo game in the Fangamer house. What'll it take to branch out to great games outside of the Overlord's experience? Love and peace, question sleep. We also got similar letters from this point of view from a couple of other people this week. And it harkens back to our interview with 1UP's Jeremy Parrish at PAX, who asked us, where's the love for Sega games in particular, he wanted to know. And so I want to start my answer to this question with a sort of preface and say, Phantasy Star, Echo the Dolphin, Comic Zone, and maybe Sonic 2. Those are all games that I would totally think about talking about on the Fangamer podcast.
I'm surprised you didn't say ActRaiser based off last week, Kevin.
ActRaiser was for Super Nintendo. Or it might have been for Genesis 2, but I think of it as a Super Nintendo game.
I'd like to preface John's answer by suggesting that Question Sleep is Jeremy Parrish.
Raise more questions than it would answer, and I would lose sleep.
Definitely, definitely. I think when it comes to the merch at a specific franchise, I have a numerous ideas for it that I've had for a long time, and given the holiday season, I'm just very familiar with it. And I just wanted, I hear a lot of people asking about it and talking about it among different forums. And it's definitely a series of games that I personally feel, and I've had other people who express similar feelings that it needs to be explored again, and it kind of feels neglected. So that's why I wanted to do merchandise on that. Well, I mean, I'm devving it right now, and it's during the holiday season, so I just wanted to kind of take care of it while everything was really busy among other groups, because I can take care of it myself. As far as other games go, I'm not against it. I'm really am not. It's just these are the kind of games that really give me a lot of inspiration to be where I am, and I just have a lot of creative fuel to do items and products for this. So that's pretty much the reason why DKC has been the choice for me. I know some of our other staff have expressed it. I think Liz and Ryan have expressed it as well. Not against it. I definitely think we'll be expanding into newer games quicker throughout this coming year. I'm not sure about the first quarter of the year. But definitely we'll be expanding into other games, and it will be my mission to make it not Super Nintendo / Nintendo specific.
Mm-hmm. And I've had a little more of a chance to think about this since PAX. And at the time, all we could say was, well, we played a lot of Super Nintendo games and the Sega kids lived down the street. But I really think there was kind of a split in your thinking, where if you played a lot of Nintendo games, in fact, it's sort of like our life paths have mirrored the paths of the consoles, where Nintendo is the company that doesn't always do exactly what'll sell the best, maybe, but they're innovating and they're taking a couple of risks here and there and trying different things and not necessarily jumping on optical media when they think they can still make 64-bit cartridges, whereas the Sega guys did the Saturn and then the Dreamcast and then died out. And so I think if you were a Sega fan, you sort of suddenly found yourself with at a loss. You found yourself at a loss, and you had to move somewhere else, whereas us Nintendo guys have been sticking together and building stuff up. Does that make any sense to anybody else at all? Because
good answer, man.
Maybe I didn't think about that as hard as I thought I did.
Stream of consciousness, man.
I take no blame whatsoever.
And I don't know. I mean, I look at games like that. Other games that I liked that aren't Nintendo related, well, at least when it comes to the company, is Castlevania. I vampires are big right now, so yeah, that might be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. That don't sparkle.
And whips. Whips are always big.
What else? I think we're further exploring Metal Gear Solid is something, but you know, we always need to branch out and do stuff. And Nintendo, one of the big reasons why we focus on Nintendo, and I definitely don't want to exclude our fans, but it's kind of how Nintendo's kind of been treating a lot of their fans recently. Is because, you know, the closing of the forums and how they do their response. I mean, for example, Capcom does an amazing, amazing job with responding to their fans and talking. They communicate very, very well. And that's one thing that I really pride, I would be really proud of myself if I was a Capcom fan and looking at how they respond. As Nintendo, unfortunately, it's just become their company way of things. And with that, I mean, because of that is reason why we are here, reason why I've done the Mother 3 handbook, the Mother 3 translation, and I think based off that same kind of craziness that we have after they've kind of ignored us, we want to do something with it. So we look at other things that they've treated the same way, which Donkey Kong Country falls under.
Let's get another question in here. Not sure if you guys follow Game Informer magazine at all, but their most recent issue for this past month had them cover their picks on the 200 best games of all time. And editorial note, that's because it was their 200th issue, so 200. Earthbound gets some pretty decent page space, but isn't even in the top 10. It comes in at 113. Being huge fans of the series, how does this make you guys feel? Would you agree? What do you think the top 10 games of all time should be to date? I know that's more than a single question, but this is a topic that always gets a lot of good, healthy debate and discussion. Keep them podcasts rolling, Luffy Dan. Thank you, Dan. For those who haven't had a chance to peruse this list yet, let me give you the rundown. The top 5 of Game Informer's top 200 is the original Legend of Zelda, the original Super Mario Brothers, Tetris, Grand Theft Auto 3, and Half-Life 2. And some interesting notes. Mario Brothers 3 doesn't come in until number 9. Mrs. Pac-Man is the highest arcade game at number 10. World of Warcraft at number 11. Just looking through here, Super Metroid at 21. GoldenEye at 32. You got to go all the way down to... they got Double Dragon at 68. They got Okami somewhere down here at 83. Holy moly. This list has absolutely torn people in every single direction, every which way but forward, over what really should be at the top, over how bad the methodology is, over how random the whole thing seems to be. What really struck me about the list is that they can't seem to decide whether the influence, what a game did that other games in the future would go on to copy, or the actual goodness, what the game did right in the first place and what made it fun to play, was more important. And so they just sort of seem to intermittently have games from both sides of that spectrum dabbled in, and then just random things like Diablo 2 at 28. What the heck?
I'd like to posit that any top anything lists are just an extremely effective form of corporate trolling.
Absolutely.
True. Yep, definitely agreed.
I'm curious, on this vein of discussion, I'd be interested to hear what everyone in here would put as just their number one game. I don't need the whole list, but what would you guys all put as your number one game of all time?
Super Metroid.
Not Chrono Trigger.
Super Metroid for me.
Chrono Trigger. Not...
You're both wrong.
You're all wrong. Damn it. The whole damn system is wrong. Right, okay, so we got Chrono Trigger, we got Super Metroid. What else we got? What's yours, Liz?
I would say Super Mario 64.
Mario 64, okay. That was also Nintendo Power's number one in their 100th issue.
Also Chrono Trigger.
Ah, two votes for Chrono Trigger.
I'm going to have to say Super Mario Bros. 3.
Mario Bros. 3 was an excellent, excellent game. I think that's like number 3 for me.
Yeah, that's definitely in my top 5.
That's top 5 for sure. Charlie, what's top? Number 1.
I'm going to have to go ahead and say Final Fantasy Tactics.
All right. It's a good game. Good game. What's yours, Reed? Are you there, Reed?
I'm going to have to go with Bejeweled.
Really? Really? Because you know what?
Diner Dash.
Come on, Cannonball is better than Bejeweled.
Farmville.
Oh yeah, Brian, I heard you're doing pretty good in Farmville.
Yeah, I gotta blame my girlfriend for that one.
Oh my god, we have an actual Farmville player.
Hold on, we got a suggestion from Steve here.
Is it also from Farmville?
I'm not even part of this podcast, but
Hi, Steve.
I'm just gonna have to go out and say it and just say Earthbound.
There. So now all the guys with pitchforks who have been listening to our podcast and going, "Well, if one of them doesn't say Earthbound, then I'm going to burn something tonight." You can put your torch down. Steve said Earthbound. Stomping around with the pitchforks and the torches.
I think there's a difference between your favorite game and the game that inspired you the most.
Right. That's a pretty.
But for
point.
Me, that's the same game. That's Chrono Trigger.
But you effectively work at a Earthbound site.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Earthbound's like number 2. Yeah, but Chrono Trigger, if you want, the way I look at it, if you can make a game that perfectly encapsulates all that has come before in a package that, from beginning to end, makes sense over a dense and varied plot line that gives you a familiar yet challenging new system of interacting with the world, including battles, mini events in between battles, and talking to people and just generally moving around. And you can get all of that stuff into as finely polished a package for the time, graphics, sound, environment-wise, then you have made the perfect game. And that, to me, is Chrono Trigger, in a nutshell. And then Mario Bros. 3 is in that category. It's in that upper echelon where they've made everything as pinnacle as could possibly have been in 1990, and like that to me is perfect game. That's my criteria, if you will. I noticed the most posts of Game Informer's top 200 actually went back to Nintendo Everything, who reposted the list with no context whatsoever. And so you just have, here's Load Runner, and it's in between Ikaruga and Gunstar Heroes, and I reacted more to the fact that they didn't explain themselves than I did to any actual placement on the list.
Well, I think nostalgia has a lot to do with it. I mean, you know, if the game came before, sure, it was pretty good. Sure, it was groundbreaking. For example, the original Zelda, as you said, is number 1. And I actually agree with that, because that game to me was just awesome. And the fact that there's 2 quests, which is the second one, which I have yet to actually ever beat, it was a great game. And then, it spawned other Zelda games, some great, some not so great. So I guess my attachment to it is a bit nostalgic, but I can also appreciate why it's up there.
And also their justification for it is, I think it's pretty sound, the one that they have in the actual magazine. I don't know if it's available online anywhere.
I haven't seen it, certainly, but you have the actual magazine, Charlie.
Would you like me to read it? Oh, shit. Let's see, how many lifelong gamers did Shigeru Miyamoto's masterpiece create? How many developers, many of them legends in their own right, cite The Legend of Zelda as a beloved inspiration? It's difficult to overstate its impact on the development of video games as an entertainment, art, and cultural phenomena. On a mechanical level, very few games to this date can claim such a perfect fusion of elements as diverse as exploration, collection, puzzle-solving, combat, and storytelling. From a right-brain perspective, few works capture the transcendent spirit of whimsy and adventure that The Legend of Zelda effortlessly expresses. Ahead of its time by years, if not decades, Zelda is responsible for significant chunks of design that we take for granted in nearly every genre. We all owe a great debt to gamers, to Miyamoto and everyone else at Nintendo who made this title possible. The Legend of Zelda is no less than the greatest game of all time.
Wow. That they almost converted me with that. That's pretty good. But even
I was
going to
say, that was pretty forceful. It was nice that they weren't like, in our opinions.
that was a definite note there. Go ahead, Liz.
No, I was just saying, Reed was saying that they stood by their opinion, and I'm pretty convinced they make the good point that no one else had done anything like it before, and they did a great job of it, and it did set the standard.
Okay, but let me ask you this then. What do you think was a more influential invention on the video gaming scene? The overhead, top-down exploration synthesis of everything that Charlie just mentioned about Legend of Zelda, which I think borrows at least a little bit from Adventure back on the Atari, or Super Mario Brothers bringing in side-scrolling with pits and jumps and all sorts of hidden things in the block and putting that into vogue, just as a hypothetical example.
Well, I mean, Super Mario Brothers was number two, so I think they thought it was a pretty close call themselves anyway.
You know, I see what you're saying, Kevin, and I can see how both of those things, from a design standpoint, both are definitely impact on games in the future. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think the prize should go to Zelda just from a story lore standpoint. It's not the Iliad, but it's for its time, it was impressive that they put together a story and kind of made you care. And the characters have held up with time because they're not the most developed characters. They are pretty iconic, and it's...
Well, but part of that is due to the sequels, isn't it? I mean, Zelda 2 had a little more story. You could certainly talk to people in Zelda 2 more effectively than you could the old man who tells you, East Peninsula is the secret. You had sort of more... East Palace is the secret. Okay, so it's a bad example.
Or this is my house.
Yeah, or it's dangerous to go alone. Much like with your opinion, it's dangerous to proceed alone.
Dangerous to proceed alone when you're producing a podcast, absolutely. But I think if you want to talk about a game that really made me care outright about the characters, you'd step it up to Link to the Past. It took all those prior elements that we talked about in The Legend of Zelda and stepped them up to a point where, like, who can forget the first time you bombed your way through the twins' house and reconciled their differences? You don't even get anything directly for that except access to the little raceway thing. You get these two guys just back together, and there's just all sorts of weird family drama and stuff happening all through that world, and it really, that really hit home for me, whereas in the original Legend of Zelda, I'm out to rescue a princess, and all these guys in caves and old women selling me medicine are sort of incidental to my cause. I didn't feel it.
Well, you felt about as much as you could for a game that came out in 1987. I mean, there were limitations that they had back then that they just couldn't work up to.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I still feel what Kevin's saying, that there's just not a lot of stuff pulling you to the characters and stuff in the original Zelda. There really wasn't for me, and I definitely enjoyed A Link to the Past a lot more.
I have to agree. I feel Link of the Past was just one of those Zeldas that really made the first one better in every way.
But, and give it a couple of years. Look at Star Tropics. Look at Crystalis. Look at other games that were coming out in just a few short years on the same system with those same limitations. Maybe an improved chipset inside the game, and that's it. And they're full-fledged stories. They're giving you full grammar-correct back and forth with villagers and people you can talk to.
Yeah, Kevin mentioned Crystalis, which I was about to mention. That's one of my favorite games on the NES because it just goes all out and having a complete story and all a really good battle and battle system and item system and all that kind of stuff. And I thought it was great when I played it. But no one seems to have ever heard of it, except for Kevin.
Yeah, because I'm awesome.
I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
Same here.
Same here.
Same.
It's pretty good. I don't know. I mentioned, I think it's our obscure game of the week. Last week was Live Alive.
Live Alive.
We got Crystalis.
Who's the one who told me, don't play the remake, play the original?
Of Crystalis? That was me.
Yeah. Well, what was the reasoning?
They remade it for the Game Boy Advance, but they screwed it up. They, like, changed the music.
It wasn't even Game Boy Advance. It was Game Boy Color.
Oh, yeah, original Game Boy, yeah. And they shrunk the screen down.
Because apparently the Game Boy Color, I didn't know this until a couple of years ago, but apparently it had exactly the same chip read-only memory, whatever, some sort of technical specification, but it was exactly the same as the NES. So that's why there were a ton of just, you know, like a Bionic Commando got remade and put out on the Game Boy Color. And it was because they could just transfer the entire program into a Game Boy cartridge, add a couple of casual little technical fixes, and just throw it out there. And the one place where it fell down in its emulation was in sound effects. So the remake of Crystalis has really awful music on the Game Boy Color.
And that's really bad, because Crystalis had some really, really good music.
Yeah. But it's okay now, because nobody plays the Game Boy Color anymore.
That's true.
I still have my Game Boy Color.
Oh, I still have it. Mine. We don't play it, though.
The batteries are dead.
Good luck finding new games for it.
I played Link's Awakening DX on my Game Boy Color like 3 weeks ago. I had a good time there, getting my red tunic.
Such an excellent game.
To be fair, I still have my Super Game Boy. If you remember that, you plug your Super Game Boy into the Super Nintendo, and then you plug the Game Boy games in.
That thing was so awesome.
And with like Pokemon Red, you had the special, the custom border, and the towns changed color, and it was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
I was just going to say, I'd like to assert my dominance by exclaiming that I bought the Virtual Boy with my own money.
Oh, wow.
My God.
I don't know.
We have a winner.
Look, in all seriousness, I mean, I was tempted to rent that from Blockbuster at the time. What was the one game that made you want to get that?
Well, I mean, it came with Mario Tennis, and since I saved all of my money in a little vinyl bag with cats printed on it, there was no way I was going to save up for the system and a game, so I just played the game that came bundled. And Mario's Tennis was great until it made me sick.
So, like 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, roughly.
And then you woke up and had the idea for Starman.net.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, screw this. I'm going back to the Super Nintendo.
I remember playing Wario Land on the Virtual Boy at a Toys R Us display stand. And I must have played it for a good 20 minutes, and then my eyes were completely bloodshot the rest of the day.
Was that any good?
Wario Land was actually pretty good. You could have put it on the Game Boy, or it really felt like a Game Boy title, and he like jumps off frames into the background of stages and stuff, so it kind of used the 3D without overwhelming you with it.
That's the game I always wanted to try out, but I never wanted to go through the pretty much seizure-inducing pain.
Yeah. Now, I played 3 minutes of the jet simulation thing. It was called Red Alert or something, and it was just awful.
Yeah, Wario was it was pretty good. I liked all the Wario games. And actually, Jade Krause, she's one of the 1UP contributors, and she was talking the other day on her blog on there about how she was replaying Wario Land. And I just pulled up a Let's Play, and man, I missed that game. That was a really excellent game.
Was that the one for the Game Boy?
Yeah, the old Game Boy, the old the ancient brick green and yellow Game Boy.
Super Mario Land 3, I believe that one was, yeah.
Wait, what was the Wario one was called Wario World, or what was it? I can't remember now.
Well, first he shows up in Mario Land 2 as the bad guy, and that was 6 golden coins. And then Mario Land 3, then colon, then the subtitle is Wario Land. Then he shows up on his own in Wario Land on the Virtual Boy, and then he invents a mega corporation to make minigames, I guess. I think that's
how it is. I think there's one more in between there. They gave him one last Game Boy chance.
Oh, I know what it was. It was the one with Bomberman in it. Wario Blast or something like that.
No, I think there was that. But I forgot that one. No, there was another one where the pirates came back from the third or his second game. Actually, no, his first game, the pirates came back. And I remember him, the game starts off with he's in bed. And there's an alarm clock, and if you wake up, you take one path. But if you sleep through the alarm, you take another path and get a completely different ending.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it was. It was Wario Land 2. And Miyamoto made a big deal when it came out about how you never die. You have no lives in this game. You just – because you could like get pounded flat by a hammer to get through a narrow space. But then if you hit the spikes, you'd inflate again, and you couldn't go through the narrow space. So you had to go back to the hammer or something. It was him being all like weird about how new modern games don't have lives anymore. You just have the same challenge over and over again.
Yeah, that was definitely that game.
I liked Wario Blast. You got to blow stuff up. I think we got time for one more question here. Let's finish it off. This one is a two-part question. I believe it's from Australia.
Is it going to ask Reed to marry again? Because we've already discussed this.
No, actually, Reed is not at all mentioned. But first of all, for Liz, will you marry me?
That's actually for me.
And for all of you, what do you think of the magical quest starring Mickey Mouse on the Super Nintendo? Thanks, mate. Dr.
Wong. I love that game, actually.
Well, I just got a marriage proposal. Would you shut up and let me hear who it's from?
Same guy as last week, Liz, this Dr. Worm guy. I think he's just going to ask each of us every week until we've all said no. He's trying to marry into the Fangamer Millions.
Actually, I'm pretty sure Dr. Worm is female. Or, you know, a girl.
Have we confirmed that yet?
Yeah, I think I remember this person from the Facebook. Although, on there, I believe she goes by the name Gordon Freeman, so it doesn't help the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, what you're telling me is that that message was not from Theos.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't really care.
Hell of a proposal, though. Hey, I heard you on a podcast. Will you marry me?
Oh, he's
and then like, you'll find out, even if you said yes, he wouldn't find out until next Tuesday anyway, so...
He's upstairs. I think he can hear me.
He's laughing.
No, he's weeping.
He's complaining because you're using up his bandwidth and he needs that for World of Warcraft.
I know. Ice Crown came out. That's a big deal now. If you asked him what he was playing this week, he'd be telling you he's working up to cutting the head off the Lich King or however they're going to rock it.
Same thing he plays every week, Pinky.
Pretty much. No, last week was Mass Effect.
Oh, okay.
So back to the question at hand, the real question. Brian, you said you played Magical Quest starring Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, it's actually one of the Super Nintendo games I have over in my little collection over there. It was actually, you know, I know it was Mickey Mouse. I know, you know, it was one of the Disney games. I think Disney Interactive, I think. But I could be wrong. But it was actually just a lot of fun. You pick up these star blocks. It almost didn't feel like a Mickey Mouse game. It felt like it could have been something else, but it just had a Mickey Mouse theme.
Remember, that game kicked the crap out of me when I was a kid. I could only go through it with a Game Genie, but it was a lot of fun, especially with the magic suit.
Oh, that's right. You get to become a magician.
I think that was the last era when some Disney games were actually really good. Like, Aladdin was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, but then The Lion King came out, and you could sort of feel the slide was starting, that they were starting to not care as much anymore.
I believe Epic Mickey wants to have a word with you.
Oh, the gauntlet is thrown.
Yeah, I think this would be a good way to pull back some of that magic to some of those Disney games, and I'm really looking forward to see how that plays out.
Oh, you know what? I take it back. The game was by Capcom. That's why it was good.
Oh. So
either by them or brought over by them, but either way, they had a hand in it.
That was an awesome underhanded compliment, Brian.
Yeah, good job.
Because, you know, Disney is just this big, huge, multinational corporation with billions upon billions of dollars. What do they know about making video games? Let's get Capcom, damn it.
Kevin, I believe you've forgotten about Kingdom Hearts 358 over 2 days. It's got to be good.
I have to interject. Oh. What the heck is that title about? I don't know anything about these games.
I looked it up, and I read the explanation like 3 or 4 times, and I played the first 2 games, but I have no idea. I can't make any sense of what the hell it is at all.
Is it between 1 and 2?
No, that was a Chain of Memories. I think it's like a prequel to 1 where there's even less Disney and even more of like the weird, creepy square goth people, and it's just
that's kind of started really going downhill. The first one was cool because you had what was it? Hades and Cloud were together, and Hades was actually in the game. He was voiced James Woods was voicing a character next to Cloud. Now that was a weird mix, but it was just some level of awesome.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the whole Kingdom Hearts. I remember that. That kills my argument.
And then Lance Bass.
Oh yeah, well, Lance Bass was Sephiroth, right?
Yeah, it was kind of. Oh, no, or was he Cloud?
Are you serious?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. He was Sephiroth.
That's even weirder.
There was a bunch of I know Aerith was Mandy Moore in one of them, and in the other one she was the chick from American Beauty. Mira Sorvino? Mina Savari? One of those two.
That's so screwed up and so appropriate at the same time.
That game had kind of an all-star cast, in a way. I think if you go and look it up... Oh, you know what? Kairi is Claire from Heroes. How's that for interesting? I guess it's not as interesting as I thought, because neither the game nor the show are very good.
What's really weird is, as interesting as it is to hear that a different celebrity or actor or somebody you feel like you should know from a different medium happens to be a character in a game, if you look up the video game voice artists who keep getting used over and over and over again, and I'm thinking of one guy in particular, his name is Cam Clark, and he has played...
Liquid.
He played Liquid, he played Andre Almeida in Killer 7, he plays the caretaker of the cathedral during the monk phase in Eternal Darkness, and he plays... He's got, like, three dozen other roles, and he always sounds different. He's who in World of Warcraft?
One of the Blue Dragonflight, which, admittedly, it sounds like Liquid turned into a dragon, which is not something I would put past Kojima, so it's cool in its own way.
You always hear this voice, and then suddenly it just clicks on you, and like, wait a second, I think that's Cam Clark, and you look it up, and yeah, it's got a little of that Cam Clark magic in it.
That but you can even recognize it at all is kind of, I don't know, it seems weird, because I know, like, the world of voice acting is very interesting to look into, like the connection between the voice of Ramza and the Final Fantasy Tactics remake is also the voice of Hermes from Futurama, which you can't make that connection at all.
Wait, is that Phil Lamar? Who is that?
Yes, it is.
So it's Vamp from Sons of Liberty.
And the guy who got his face shot in and on Pulp Fiction.
Oh yeah, I forgot he was that dude.
Just shot Marvin in the face.
Exactly. I think his name's like Lamar something. I forget.
Phil Lamar. Yeah.
Phil Lamar.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts is full of a bunch of fun ones. Like Sora's obviously the kid from The Sixth Sense. I forgot that Ansem was Billy Zane, which always cracks me up.
So there you go. We like Mickey Mouse's magical mystical quest enough that it got us talking about a bunch of different voice actors. I think that's our closing image for the week, kids. Oh, boy. Join us next week when we'll talk about whether or not our spleens have exploded and how we've replaced them with plasticine. On behalf of Brian, Charlie, Matt, Johnny, Liz, and Reed and Steve, our very special guests, thanks for dropping them in once in a while, guys. My name's Kevin, but you can call me Simon if you want. Come back next time and see us on the Fan Gamer Podcast.